Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
We've had 35 resurrections of the dead. The closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect.
So I see this giant angel and I asked him his name. It's a financial company. And I realized this angel is here for our finances.
And that's a true literal story, by the way.
These people are charlatans. And it's about time we draw a line in the sand and stop fraternizing with the wolves.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's do this.
It's the Wretched Radio mail call delivery bag Q&A infotainment nationwide extravaganza featuring your voicemails, correspondences, communiques, dispatches, memorandums, and missives.
Any special message for all the kids watching at home?
What we need right now is a clear message to the people of this country.
You have 1,200 messages.
That is a bit above average.
Now here's your host, Todd Freakishly Tall Friel.
The mail is here!
Ooh, choices. You have choices. You're sitting at your computer. You see something wretched. You can get disgusted, or you can send it to us at idea@wretched.org. We love wretched things, sermons, stories, articles. If it's wretched, please choose to send it to us, idea@wretched.org. And if you choose to communicate with your thumbs, then you can text questions, comments, conundrums, snarks to 877-282-2337.
So we have a comment from Seth. You remember when we recently did the Jordan Peterson debating the 20 atheists thing? Seth wrote in and said, can you imagine if it was Ray Comfort debating those 20 atheists?
Yeah.
I bet there would have been 20 different gospel presentations.
That's not true. There would have been 20 law and gospel presentations. He absolutely would have. You're right, Seth. Because he's an evangelist. He's worried about their soul. He's not fond of letting God be put on trial and just answering speedback. Hit me with that one. And you never get to the heart of the gospel. While there is a place for apologetics, I do believe that if somebody is coming at you with a tender heart, hey, could you explain? I don't understand slavery in the Bible and like the Canaanites and all that stuff. I'll happily answer that. But when they come at you with daggers, like, I'm going to just slice and dice Christianity, I don't think that we, well, maybe even should answer those questions. Instead, we need to have the heart of an evangelist and turn the tables and aim not at their intellect, but at their consciences. That's what the law is for. To bring about conviction, the knowledge of sin, righteousness, and judgment. Then you share the gospel. I am quite certain that's what Ray would have done because he's an evangelist. Jordan Peterson, poorly, played the role of an apologist. And apologetics will never win anyone. 877-282-2337.
Okay, this is from Anonymous who texted in. Todd, I just finished my third year in Bible college. I will be a senior in August. Within the last year, I have committed numerous sexual sins that have almost cost me everything, and I still struggle with temptation daily. I constantly struggle with the shame of my sins. Do you have any advice for a wretch like me?
Well, I've got a lot of things that come to mind, but if we're going to focus on that big shame word, yes, I do have some advice for you. First of all, I would say, while it is a good sign that you are convicted of this and that you feel bad about this, sometimes that contrition needs to be surgically dissected, because if it's just a, oh, bummer, it almost cost me anything, well, then that would be the type of repentance and the type of remorse that both Judas and Esau had. And that ain't godly sorrow. That's worldly sorrow. Is your sorrow because you've sinned against God? So do an analysis on your contrition. What is motivating it? Why do you feel rotten about it? Because it is always good. When you have been committing sins that have been apparently quite damaging to you, and it sounds like on a bit of an ongoing basis, that is when we do well to examine ourselves to see if we're in the truth. Having said that, if you conclude, I just hate sinning against my God, this is not what I want, the fact that you struggle against your sin is a good sign. And if you're feeling shame after you're persuaded, yeah, I'm a child of God, I've just been stupid and straying and so foolish, I would suggest you pack up your gear and move to the foot of the cross, set up camp, and stay there. Why? Because you need to understand that as boneheaded as you have been, as sinful as you may have been, if you're a child of God, you've repented and put your trust in Jesus Christ, you cannot outsin God's grace, period. You cannot commit more sins than he is capable of forgiving. You cannot outgun God in that regard. He wins with his amazing grace. Let that wash over you as you see Jesus dying for you, a sinner, and then do not pack up your gear and go back home. Stay there because you need the expulsive power of new affections. You need a greater love than whatever this sin is. I suspect I know what it is, but nevertheless, whatever the sin is, right now, you do love it. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it. When you go to a buffet, do you pick the food you hate? No, you pick the food you love. That is why guys specifically, I talk about this in a book that's coming up. We're going to be giving it away in July, Play the Man. The guys claim, oh, I hate it. I hate watching porn. Well, no, you don't. Do you know what I hate? I hate paper cuts. Therefore, I never inflict myself with a paper cut because I do hate them. But if I love something, I'm going to choose it. When you're at the buffet, what do you choose? That's what you love. Probably means desserts. But the same thing is true with sin. You choose it because you love it, at least in the moment. What you need is a greater love. You need new affections, which will drive out your desire for the lesser thing. Looking forward to releasing that book because we're going to give it away to campuses. I think for 2 years now, we've been talking about the harvest field that I think is white on university campuses. So we're going to start to invade them with this booklet, which we're going to encourage you to give away. We'll send it to you for free. You give them away. They're going to hear law. They're going to hear gospel. It'll be a little clearer than Jordan Peterson. And they are going to also then see that there is a better love worth pursuing, and that is Jesus Christ, not pornography. But then we're also going to campuses. So far, two are scheduled. I'm hoping for more, even this fall, where we go to university campuses to talk to the kids about different issues, whether it's mental health, deconstructing their faith, creation science, etc. We want to go to university campuses in order to reach the white harvest field because they're open to talking about it. Play the Man is a part of that initiative. We're going to be going to the campuses to do bigger events on the campuses to destroy those kids. I'm sorry, wrong ministry. We want to do the opposite of destroy them, and we want to help them and build them up and show them that there is a better way. We're going to be doing that in July. In the meantime, to the young man who wrote in, wanting to stop sinning, start loving Jesus more. Stare at him. You will grow in your love for him, and that will drive out your love for your current paramour, whatever it happens to be. 877-282-2337.
All right, this is from Ramona. Todd, I'm trying to help someone understand why how he dresses matters. Do you have any resources for this?
I wonder what the dynamic is here. I always hate to step into the middle of a husband and wife. Well, of course, how you dress matters. But it's funny. People say, well, you can't judge a book by its cover, yet we do it all the time. You say, okay, if you're out and about and somebody's walking through the grocery store and they're wearing a tuxedo, do you just go, whatever? No, you go, I wonder what they're doing here because they're dressed for something else. Our clothing communicates. Now, it can also communicate vanity, but it can also communicate a good word, that we dress in light of others, that we don't put on the things that maybe just make us really happy. No, what will be the things that I can put on my body that speak a good word about Jesus Christ? That's what I want to wear. What do I want to put on my body that won't make somebody covet, that won't make somebody wish they had my clothes instead of theirs? That won't make somebody lust after one's body. That's how we want to be thinking. And if you're trying to persuade somebody of that, take them back to the garden. Because clothing is a uniquely human pursuit. Animals, they don't care that they walk around in their birthday suits. Why do we? because of the fall. It's an effect of the fall. Trust is lost. And so we feel this sense of, I don't want to be exposing this. I can't trust me. This just feels wrong. So when we see in the garden the necessity in our current state for clothing, we need to understand that clothing speaks. It says something. Primarily, it says we're fallen sinners and I need a covering from Jesus Christ, who's promised, by the way, in Genesis 3:15. So I would encourage your friend, whoever he happens to be, and to show him that it's theological and to show him that he can make a difference in the way that he dresses. Now, I don't know if the current squabble happens to be about, well, he's just dressing like a bum. Okay, what would I say to a dude like that? Let's just say it's a husband. And the wife is like, he just wears that same stupid thing and he never takes it on. It's always, but okay, is he necessarily sinning by donning that? Let's just assume not in his heart. I would say, dude, your clothes are communicating you don't love your wife and that you're putting your desires before hers. I think you need to reconsider that. And if a different article of clothing makes your wife happy, then I would lovingly say, put it on because it's speaking to her. And that is exactly what clothing does. Ooh, count your blessings. Look at the time because, oh, if I had more than 6 seconds, we'd be talking about what you wear to church. This is Wretched Radio.
You know what's remarkable? Currently, right now, at this present time, there are over 4 million podcasts in production. And something unexpected has happened. Fortis Institute's podcasts have quietly climbed the charts, all of them in at least the top 5% of all podcasts worldwide, 3 of them in the top 2%. Now, we're not here to shout from the rooftops about rankings. We're actually here because truth matters. For 25 years, we've been steadfast. First as Wretched Radio, then as Gospel Partners Media, now standing firm as Fortis Institute. Todd Friel, Adam Tyson, Brad Bigney, Greg Gifford, John Krotz, Libby Gloss, and real teachers addressing real issues. And you can find it all on the Fortis Plus app. Completely free. Hundreds of hours of content already there. Absolutely free. Download it, use it, share it, and then partner with us at FortisInstitute.org because we truly believe the church deserves better. FortisInstitute.org. 25 years. That's a quarter century of standing firm for biblical truth.
This is Wretched Radio.
Through every cultural shift, every challenge, every opportunity to proclaim God's truth, you've been with us. And for that, we're grateful. What started as Wretched Radio has grown into something remarkable. Today, as part of Fortis Institute, we're reaching more believers than ever before. Our daily podcasts and radio shows, video content, and biblical resources continue to strengthen local churches and equip the saints just as we've done for 25 years. But none of this would be possible without faithful partners like you. You've helped us reach millions with the unchanging truth of God's Word. As we celebrate this milestone, we're reminded that our mission remains the same, serving the King of Kings by strengthening His church. Join us at FortisInstitute.org as we continue this journey together for 25 more years of faithful service.
Until tomorrow, go serve your king.
So if we were going to be honest with one another, we would have to admit that every day our phone buzzes with celebrity scandals and political outrage and notifications of TikTok trends, all the stuff that doesn't matter. But what if your phone could deliver something different? Because it can. Meet Fortis Plus. If you haven't already downloaded it yet, I want to urge you to take that opportunity right now. It's free and it will replace noise with nourishment. Picture this, 7 new pieces of content every single day. And I'm not talking clickbait or gossip. I'm talking real truth for real life. The app is already full of hundreds of hours of content. Again, completely free. And when I say free, I mean free. I don't mean hidden costs and temporary trials and premium tiers. No subscription traps at all. Because while everyone else all over the world is selling you something, we are giving something away. Fortis Plus. Download it right now where you download your apps or just go to fortisplus.org because what feeds your mind shapes your life.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teaches us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the true vine. The Old Testament describes Israel as a vine planted in the desert. Jesus is the true vine, and those who trust in him are grafted in to receive life and nourishment from Christ.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Hey, look at the time. I guess we can talk about what you wear to church. This is Wretched Radio. It's interesting that that individual wrote in about the squabble between her and a dude about what he wears. Mm-hmm. Just last night, I was reading an article. It was from 2012. And I didn't know who it was, but it was a very lengthy treatise on what we wear to church and what we're communicating and why it is historically you've dressed a different way for different contexts, because clothing speaks. And it always slays me when I see somebody who gets dressed up for a funeral or for a wedding. And you say, so why are you all dressed up? Well, funeral. Got to get dressed up for a funeral. Why? Well, it shows respect and it's kind of an important thing. Mm-hmm. So tell me then why you wear Bermuda shorts and flip-flops to church. I'm just curious because it seems to me that's an important thing. That's a special event. And I get it. Context, cultural context can dictate exactly how dressing up manifests itself. But if we make zero effort to go to church, it speaks. This ain't no big thing. And it is. Would you kindly send your wretched things to idea@wretched.org or text away 877-282-2337. Okay, Jimmy, that was pretty good for me.
But
that was only like a minute. Because that's a thing.
It is a thing.
It's a thing. But it's deeper than clothing. It just is.
It's a heart thing.
It is a heart thing. Yeah. And it's an understanding of God thing. And it's an understanding of reverence thing. And it's an understanding of his transcendent nature, that he's otherly and different. He's a big God. He's an awesome God. We get dressed up for concerts. We're going over to friends for dinner. You're not going to wear that, are you? No, I guess I better take this off my lawn clothes and put on something else. But for church, shouldn't we feel at least that same degree of responsibility to communicate a good word? Just asking. 877-282-2337.
All right, this is a text from Jess. Todd, one of the pastors at my church seems to avoid me. He has me blocked on Facebook, and every time I come within 10 feet of him, he seems to see me and walk away. Mm. I have no idea what I did or what's going on. He hasn't spoken a word to me or my family in over 6 months. Mm. I don't know what to do in this situation.
Going to have to find a way to talk to him. That's what you need to do. Don't talk to others about him. You're going to have to get on his schedule. So you'll have to make a beeline for him. Hey, brother. It's really important we meet. When can we do that? Lovingly, respectfully. And then bring your observations, hoping to be shocked. What? You haven't been? Wait, you mean you lost your Facebook account? So that's why, I'm not really blocked. Whatever it is, just hope for the best. And approach him and say, hey, my heart's kind of heavy. I'm getting the sense and I want to make sure I haven't sinned against you. And then let the fellow speak. That is the best way to deal with any of these church, we'll call them conflicts. You've got to be communicating. Do it, whether pastor or not, respectfully, lovingly. Check your heart. Prepare your evidence, if you will, to bolster your concern or even your accusation, if we want to phrase it that way. And then approach him lovingly and respectfully and get it sorted. And that'll bring all the clarity that you need to know what's going on. This is true for virtually every single church conflict. Face-to-face communication. And incidentally, I am really persuaded perhaps the most pernicious poison inside of a church is gossip. That we talk about others to others, but we don't talk to them. That is just not... hold on a second. This is where... Hold on. This is Ephesians chapter 4, which we happen to be studying in Bible study at Alpharetta Bible Church. So if you're ever going to visit us, Come early. It'll be worth your time. Ephesians chapter 4. Paul has labored long and hard. Here's the magnificent gospel. Your sins have been forgiven. You're adopted into the family of God. It's amazing. And then he launches into, this is how you live that out. This is what that looks like. And it's really convicting because the standard is high. Now, before jumping into what that standard is, remember, God's standard is the best standard. If God says it, it's not because he's a cosmic killjoy. It is because he knows what is best for us. So Ephesians chapter 4, this is verse 7. There's a lot of therefores in chapter 4 because it's hearkening back. Because of the gospel, because of what's been done for you, I say and testify in the Lord, you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk in the full futility of their mind. That word futility just jumped out at me. When you're seeing what's going on in the world, the latest craziness, think futility. When their arguments are totally flipped upside down and they're willing to somehow, for instance, defend, what was that boy in California who thinks he's a girl, who was not a superstar with the boys, identified as a girl, started running in the girls' track, wins like 4 of the different, of the, what are they called? That's gymnastics.
The
quarters, seasons.
Events.
There you go. That's the one right there. And you didn't even use AI. No. Look at us. He won 4 of the event. And it's like, and people defend it. It's because their minds are futile. They're darkened. They're just plain broken. That's their mind. You and I have the mind of Christ. So we shouldn't walk that way, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance of their heart, the blindness of their hearts. You haven't learned Christ this way. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind that you put on the new man. So this is put off, put all. Hey, stop doing this stuff. Start doing that stuff. That's always the message in Ephesians chapter 4. Hey, you're stealing? Okay, stop doing that. Start working and giving it away. And then it gets into, at the end of Ephesians chapter 4, the mouth and how we talk. And this is, I think, something that Paul stresses because he knows the dangers of it. Therefore, putting away all lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. That's an imperative, by the way. Do not let the sun go down, nor give place to the devil. Let him who steals, steal no longer. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. And you say, what's a corrupt word? It's not necessarily foul speech. It's something that tears down, that chips away. Because we're supposed to, he said earlier in Ephesians 4, be building up one another in love. Build up. So instead, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth that's put off, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. So stop gossiping. Stop, whatever it happens to be. And if you feel like I got to say something about this person, then say something good. Say it to them. Say it about them. Train yourself to watch that little forest fire you got inside of your mouth. Don't let it come burning down the church. Instead, go, okay, all right. Instead of saying that, what can I say that is good? What can I say that would build up? What can I say that would edify? That's what we need inside of the church, because I'm telling you, the corrosive nature of gossip and speaking poorly about one another. And I got to tell you, and it's so easy to do, isn't it? Jimmy, I was just thinking, we really need to talk about Emily.
I got a lot to say.
I don't like to bring this up, but I just was watching. I really don't want to. Does not give you license to let it fly. And we're prone to do that. So Paul belabors it. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And instead, so stop doing that. You get rid of that wrath and anger and that corrosive speech, the clamor. Stop that and be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. Ask yourself a question. What do you want your church culture to be like? Do you want it to be a place where you might be the next victim of gossip? Do you really want to be having those conversations in the hallway? Wouldn't it be sweet to go to a church where you heard good things being said about other believers, where you said good things about believers, where believers said good things about you? Don't we prefer that? I think so. And that is why we need to put it off. And we need the talking about people instead of talking to people. So if you have an issue with somebody, go to that person. Talk to that person. Bring your concern to that person. And remember, your concern should be spiritual, not just because you're agitated. If we stopped the gossip and started edifying speech in our churches, whoa! Wow, what a place that would be. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. Well, the culture of death continues as two prominent euthanasia advocates have now chosen the very death they promoted for others. A doctor in Switzerland's last resort euthanasia group died by assisted suicide after being traumatized by his arrest over the Sarko suicide pod case. Meanwhile, in Canada, Prince Carter, whose mother's Supreme Court case brought euthanasia to the country, is planning his own assisted death due to pancreatic cancer. The CBC couldn't contain their excitement, celebrating this as a neat bit of symmetry where the son follows his mother's deadly legacy. Speaking of institutions abandoning their calling, the Episcopal Church has formally blessed sexual perversion with what they are calling a Pride Eucharist. The denomination paraded the cross of Christ at the head of a procession celebrating behaviors that Scripture clearly condemns, proclaiming that, quote, everyone belongs, except those who still believe what Jesus actually taught. Shifting gears, President Trump signed a travel ban targeting countries that refuse to properly vet their citizens, restricting travel from 12 nations, including Afghanistan, Iran, Libya, and Somalia. Meanwhile, Arizona's Democratic governor vetoed legislation preventing China from buying land near military installations, because apparently letting our chief adversary purchase property around Air Force bases makes complete and perfect total sense. The education indoctrination machine suffered two notable setbacks this week. Christian McGee, suspended for saying the term illegal alien in his North Carolina high school, won a $20,000 settlement after the school branded him racially biased for using a term found in federal law dictionaries. Yeah. Florida high schoolers got a taste of that same indoctrination when Miami-Dade College forced them to complete a questionnaire asking disturbing questions like, what caused your heterosexuality and have you considered changing? The assignment, part of a college prep course, asks students to blame straight people for overpopulation and question why they insist on showing off their heterosexuality. Finally, a North Carolina mother provided her own case study in Nature versus Nurture when she assaulted school officials during a meeting about her daughter's fighting problem. Mariah Hector threw the principal against a wall and choked the assistant superintendent, explaining she was angry about how they handled her daughter's bullying. Hector's violent response to discussing her daughter's violence answered a lot of questions about apples not falling too far from trees. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app in order to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Know your church fathers. Gregory of Nyssa was an opponent of Arianism at the Council of Constantinople in 381. He wrote a book called Not Three Gods, explaining that there is one God in three persons. Each member of the Trinity is fully God with all the divine attributes, yet each member of the Trinity is a distinct person. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you're hungry, perhaps you could chew on this. This is Wretched Radio. Please send wretched things to 877-28. No, idea. I think I'm having Radio Lexi. I'm getting my calls all confused here. Send wretched stuff to idea@wretched.org or text questions, comments. There it is. Conundrum snarks to 877-282-2337. Perhaps you would like to ruminate on this headline from MSNBC. Catholic bishops sue Washington State over a law requiring clergy to report child abuse. Why should you chew on that? Because your church is vulnerable to those things. Those things can happen. It could happen in counseling. You could discover it somehow, whether it's online or with the person. Some sort of sin is going on. What sort of responsibility do we have here toward the government? Do I have to keep a confidence on this when I know that criminal activity is taking place? If you haven't thought that through, I encourage you to do so and get it written down. Have a policy for this. You're going to want to think it through. We will tackle this at least to a degree next week here on Wretched Radio. But I would encourage you, maybe ask your pastor, your elders, hey, what is our policy if we discover something like that is going on? Because how many times have we seen this? Whether it's a church, it's an institution, an organization, where things don't get dealt with well and rightly, and it causes nothing but awfulness. And for every single person involved, do you have a policy? Have you thunk it through? If not, I would encourage you to ruminate. And send stuff to idea@wretched.org.
Hey, can we go back to the question that we talked about in the last segment?
Apparently.
So I just had another spinoff of that I wanted to ask you about. Jess wrote in, just as a reminder, about a pastor in her church seems to avoid her, blocked her on Facebook, and she wanted to know, how does she rectify the situation? It's been ignoring her and her family. So my question is, and I completely agreed with everything that you said, but my question is, to take that a step further, if she's married, she didn't say that, but should her husband not take the lead in approaching?
Yeah, we don't know about Jess, but yes.
Yeah,
I think so. That's it's funny because I think most guys, okay, I don't know if it's most, but I'd like to think most guys would take a punch for their wife, or they'd be willing to step in front of the bullet, that they would do the hard thing. This is a hard thing. And confronting somebody lovingly, respectfully to say, hey, looks like we have an issue here. That's big boy business. Doing it right, wisely, lovingly, respectfully, but doing it, how many people do you know who are like, oh, I love that scenario. Are you kidding me? I actually hope that something bad will happen so I can confront somebody with it. I don't know who that person is. But there's probably some sort of Discovery Channel biography on them, because that's kind of nutty. Most of us are like, why don't we wait and see, dear? Maybe we just don't understand and let it go. Now, that doesn't mean that might not always be appropriate. But my point is, confronting somebody, that's a man's business. And if that's your situation, if your wife brings it to you, as a rule, do not ignore it. Do not blow it off. That's when you step in and say, okay, honey, let's talk. I want to understand this totally, thoroughly. I want to think about it, pray about it, and then formulate a strategy. And then you bring it back to your wife, tell her what you're thinking. And then if that means meeting with the individual who is doing what this pastor apparently is doing, then you do that. And I'm not even sure that I would bring my wife with. This is the type of stuff that I think is underneath the umbrella of the spiritual leadership in the home. This is what it means to be a protector of your family. This is what it means to be the one who steps out in front and does the hard stuff. That's on us, fellas. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I was curious.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And same thing for your kids. That is why I just saw an article. These two girls, they refused to get on the podium because the dude is in first place running in the girls' track event. And I applaud them. I do, but it's like, that's not their job. They shouldn't have to be the protester, if you will. It is the men who need to speak up. It is the dads that need to say something. If that's your school going on, and your daughter is being affected by it, that there's your job, Pop. There's your duty. 877-282-2337.
I mean, this is from Jordan. Todd, if someone was baptized as a believer, but that baptism was conducted by someone who has since shown themselves to be a non-Christian, is the baptism valid? Should the person seek to be baptized again?
The answer to the latter question is no, but I would ask, what do you mean valid? What do you mean valid? I don't know, but the reason I think that it's important to probe into that question is because it reveals our understanding of what baptism is. Valid? Okay, so who validates the baptism? All right, I'm gonna use the language that was presented to us. Who makes the baptism valid? Is it you? Is it the person who dunked you? Is it, I don't know, God? And the answer is he is the one who validates baptism, because it has everything to do with your heart and not a ceremony. It is a testimony. And it's not something that is efficacious in any way beyond a memorial. It is not a sacrament. It's an ordinance. It is a picture of the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. It is a picture of your death to sin being raised to new life in Christ. It is a picture. And that picture is painted no matter who does it. Whoever performs it, just if the person turns out to be an apostate later, it just doesn't matter, because they're not the one who validates the baptism. Which, by the way, you want to have a little tishrade and a little interesting dinner conversation? Who should be baptizing people? Who should be doing that? Here's one. Does it have to be the pastor? Should it be the father? Should it be the spouse? Go ahead. You chew on that at dinner time, because that's one of the conversations that pastors will have, I guarantee you, because they get all kinds of requests. Personally, I don't think there's a law. I just don't. In fact, I just heard from a friend that he and his dad baptized their kids. Well, I think that's beautiful. Now, do I think that it speaks a better word even than that if it's the pastor of the local church? Yeah, I think it speaks a better word about the local church and one's relationship to their elders. But would I say that that was somehow biblically verboten? No, I wouldn't do that. I don't think we can make a law where there is no law. Furthermore, we don't see the Ethiopian eunuch saying, hey, I know there's water there and you could dunk me, but I need to return to Ethiopia and have my pastor do it. You don't see that. So you can't make a law where there is no law. It's sort of like burial and cremation. I don't think you can make a law about it, but I think burial speaks a better word. But you can't make a law where there is no law. Idea@wretched.org.
Okay, this is a question from Vinny. Todd, I would like to know your thoughts on making general decisions like where to work, where to go to school, who to marry, and, quote, being called towards something.
Okay, dude, those were more than general. So that was everything, basically. How do you make decisions? All right, briefly, and I suspect that we've done longer treatments on this. You could probably find it at the Fortis Plus app. It's free. I was just told, I didn't know this. Apparently, when you put plus behind a name for an app, mm-hmm. that means there's a paywall.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know that. We're not a paywall. So if you go there and search for decisions, you'll probably find something. Or the YouTube machine, if you put in wretched decisions, you'll probably find a longer treatment of this. But the first thing that I would say is that your decision-making process needs to be sorted by you and not by signs. In other words, don't be looking for that fleece. Don't be looking for that proof. Don't be looking for that sign. What is God's will for my life? I can tell you God's will for your life, that you grow in godliness, that you obey his commandments, and that you seek his wisdom in the Bible. And then you go about the business of making the best decision you can as faithfully as you can with the correct motives as best you can. So number one, pray. Don't ask God, give me a sign, tell me the answer. No, Lord, give me the mind of your son. Give me wisdom in this decision. and give me clarity because I want to make a decision that is pleasing to you. Two, read the Bible for everything it has to say about your subject. Number three, find godly people who read their Bibles on these subjects and ask them for their wisdom. Number four, consider your preferences. What do you like? What don't you like? Is this one preferable to that one? Make a decision. That's number five. And that's God's will for your life. Bada boom, bada bing. Now, the question is, do I need to do that for every decision I make? And the answer is no, you don't. But I think when you're making decisions that involve potential sin, that have big implications, that are financial decisions, not for every treat that you may be by, but how are you spending your money? Yeah, I do think that you should go about the business of following that process. Why? Because that is the path to making godly decisions. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know that moment when you're scrolling through your news feed on social media and everything just feels upside down? Yeah, that's the culture we're living in right now. But you know what gets me excited? At Fortis Institute, we're not just watching on the sidelines. We've assembled a team of incredible voices who are diving deep into God's Word every single day. I'm talking about Dr. John Krotz helping you integrate theology into real life, or Dr. Adam Tyson, who is speaking truth into young men's hearts, or Pastor Brad Bigney transforming marriages from surviving to thriving. But here's the thing, while we're standing strong, that's what Fortis means, by the way, we need gospel partners who'll stand with us. People who will look at the culture and say, you know what? The church needs more than just encouragement. It needs equipping. We're not starting something new at Fortis. We're strengthening something vital. And so if you're ready to join us in this mission, if you're ready to help us equip believers with truth that transforms, then head over to fortisinstitute.org right now to find out how to become an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Truth. It's meant to travel far. It's meant to reach deep. It's meant to change lives. But for far too long, even the best biblical teaching has faced barriers, paywalls, price tags, limited access. And at Fortis Institute, well, we've been thinking differently recently. What if we could break through all of those barriers? That's why we're launching our Truth Unhindered initiative. We have extraordinary plans for the end of 2025, plans that will transform how pastors and families and seekers access life-changing teaching. But to make this vision a reality, we need you now more than ever. Right now, going on through June 30th, every dollar you give will be doubled up to $250,000. Double the impact, double the reach, double the transformation. Visit fortisinstitute.org/truth today, because when truth breaks through barriers, lives are never the same. fortisinstitute.org/truth.
Important dates in Christian history. 1735. The Great Awakening under Jonathan Edwards stirs the American colonies with many conversions and individual returns to heartfelt faith. Because of this awakening, a number of divinity schools were founded, including Princeton, Dartmouth, and Rutgers. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Make sure you subscribe to Fortis Minus. That sounded horrible. This is Wretched Radio. Fortis Plus. It implies you got to pay to get our app stuff. Well, no, you don't. So we're not going to change it to Fortis Minus. It's still fortisplus.org. But everything there is absolutely free. So please avail yourself of it. Go ahead and get that app. installed on your whatever device, and you will see hundreds, thousands of hours of content. And as long as you're at the internet and perhaps pondering, how can they give away all that stuff for free? And the answer is our gospel partners, which is why right now we have a matching gift campaign, Truth Unhindered. This is a match campaign, dollar for dollar match, so we can close the store on the stuff we still sell. We don't sell much, but it's our big Bible study stuff, the TV series, those things that we've typically relied on for, well, you know, paying the bills. We want to give all of that away too. And so we're encouraging y'all to please consider partnering with us so that we can reach people with more stuff that they need. More churches can have more good Bible studies and resources in their church, so that we can just do more and more to just give it away, which just thrills our cold conservative hearts. You can do that at fortisinstitute.org/truth.
All right, this is from Alex. Todd, is it right for a person to leave the culture and traditions of the place he is born for a different culture where he may or may not be migrating to?
Well, let's ask the question, is it right? And the answer is it's acceptable. Is it the ideal? Well, it depends on the circumstances, but I would say as a principle, which means this is not an ironclad rule, but I would encourage all of us to give more consideration of the place of your birth. And I'm not just talking about country. I'm talking about state and town. There is, in fact, last night, the night before, was watching HGTV, and it was a young couple from Buffalo, New York, that they moved to Florida because they wanted the weather. And this now they're back in Buffalo because they went to Florida, love the weather, love the tanning, but miss the family. And they're thinking, hey, we might want to start having children and not to have grandparents. Bingo. That is why family is so crucial. So now there's a million variables and scenarios. I'm just talking in generalities here. If you live in a town where your family is, if you live in a town where you've got a generational heritage, if you live in a place for a long time and you've got a lot of connections and you know a lot of people, be really slow to move on it's just nicer weather. It's just, but it has to be something I think pretty compelling to go, not because it's a law, but because I think it has tons of benefits for you and for your family. Don't jettison your town of origin quickly. Having said that, can you? Sure. Of course you can. You can move to another country if you want to. I'm just saying, don't treat your place of origin lightly, because it's a big deal. I remember, see, we came to Atlanta. We came from St. Paul, Minnesota. Wow, I've been trying to say that like I'm not from there, but I can't help it. St. Paul, Minnesota, then down to Atlanta. Now, because of a ministry work is why we came. And I got to tell you something. We felt that move. And I realized, wow, I kind of like knowing pretty much every street name in town. I like being able to know that business is owned by that family. I used to know somebody who worked there. I know that cemetery has three families that I've known. That was gone. And I miss that. You should miss that. And if not, it's maybe because you just don't realize how precious it is. So yeah, you've got permission. Just do it perhaps more slowly and thoughtfully. And send stuff to idea@wretched.org.
All right, this is a text from Anonymous. Todd, do you have any advice to give a pastor's wife that's feeling lonely within the church setting?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a common malady. Mary Beakey wrote a book for pastors' wives. Jimmy, maybe you could go to the Amazon machine and look for it. It's Mary Beakey. It's Joel Beakey's wife. And she's writing just a pastor's wife. She would know. She's been a pastor's wife for decades. Because it is a unique position. I would always like to start with reminding us we did not call the pastor's wife. We called the pastor. His family comes with, but she is not called. She should not be expected to do other things. She should be treated just like every church member, because she is. Now, having said that, there are some things that your pastor's wife deals with or misses out on that you maybe are not aware of? For instance, confiding in people. Let's just say she had a situation at home with her husband, and it's something she was genuinely seeking godly counsel for, not to gossip. She needs godly counsel on this. Who's she going to talk to? She can't, because that's the pastor, and she'd be talking, and that would undermine and could make them, and what if it got out that, and they'd not. So she has to zip it and keep it all inside of herself. If you should be aware that she lives in that world. You should be aware that being just feeling comfortable and being herself, because people look at her there. To give you an idea, I think of that we have put pastors' wives into a position that I think it makes things hard in some ways. There are some denominations, man. The pastor's wife is known as the first lady. Certainly not a biblical title. It's probably more of a cultural thing. But what does it indicate? Well, there's something special about the pastor's wife. And she then feels that pressure. And maybe she doesn't ever feel like she can be weak, vulnerable, or even herself, because she has to kind of comport herself with a role that has been imposed on her by the congregation. And by the way, all of this stuff is just natural. This isn't like, oh, the church is the day. It's just, it happens, and we just need to be aware of it. So if you're a pastor's wife, what I might suggest at the very least is find some folks, some ladies outside of the church in whom you can confide, maybe other pastors' wives. Find somebody not in your zip code where it couldn't pose any potential problems. And that's at least then a way to have some relationships that can be as transparent and as vulnerable as possible, because there are indeed dangers inside of a church of sharing those things, especially as the pastor's wife. Mary Beakey's book is called...
Well, I didn't find that one, but I did find a book that she contributed to, Letters to Pastors' Wives. She contributed to that book along with Donna Askell. And
Tom's wife.
Let's see, Margie Tripp.
Oh, Ted's wife.
Right.
Ted and Margie.
Yeah. Also, Mrs. Krotz, Lynn Krotz.
This is like everybody we know.
That's right. It's Letters to Pastors' Wives. And it's on, you can get it at biblicalcounseling.com.
That's John Krotz's wife.
Right. These are really, yeah.
They're all good. Yeah, that would be something I'd encourage. And by the way, I would encourage you too, if you're not listening to John Krotz's podcast, get plugged in, because man, it's good. And even as you learn whatever it is that he's teaching, you are going to hear a gentleman. You're just going to hear the tone of a godly man who cares. Doesn't mean he's soft and wimpy and not steely strong when it comes to theology. Ah, but he's that shepherd's heart and just a gentleman. Integrated is the name of his podcast. Integrated with Dr. John Krotz, whose wife contributed letters to a book that would help pastors' wives called Letters to a Pastor's Wife.
Letters to Pastor's
there
Wives.
There you have it, 877-282-2337.
Right, this is from Kate and Todd. I shared the gospel with a family member. What do I do now? Do I share it again later or just keep praying?
Wisdom. Got to use wisdom. There's no formula here. You want to be as persistent as you can without being obnoxious. And I can't tell you how many times that is, because I don't know the dynamic of the relationship. Now, it's good that you did it once. Maybe just circle back with a follow-up. Hey, do you remember a couple of weeks ago, did you ever think about any of that stuff we talked about? There you go. So you can just be asking questions. And note this, I'm a little reticent to say this, so I might be wanting to have a take it back. But if you shared the gospel completely, the law and the gospel with somebody, I think following up is the right phrase. Do you need to, every single time you talk to them, share the law and the gospel? And I think the answer is no. I mean, great if you can, but I think once you've shared it with somebody, I don't want to say you're off the hook, but you've done your duty. You've shared with them. And you shouldn't feel guilty. Well, I need to share the law and the gospel 7 more times. Otherwise, their blood is on my... No, you exercised your faithfulness. I think you did what you're responsible to do, and that is to make the most of every opportunity. So you've done that. Now just follow up and do your best to make it real. One of the best things you can do is lose the, all right, I've got to wait for the right opportunity here, and then I'm going to spring it on him, and I'm going to be able to, and then after we order the dessert, I'm going to say the, just lose that and let it be natural, because it's going to reveal that you actually care. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.